T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
I'm speaking to you from Memphis, Tennessee. Brad Carson's producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day. No obstacles. No disruptions.
Well, Daddy lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and wedding rings.
And I hope you like front offices filled with former general managers, because the Memphis Grizzlies now have a front office filled with former general managers. In fact, 3 of them. We've been general managers of a total of 6 different NBA franchises, all working under a 30-year-old. It's an interesting setup. We'll talk about it momentarily. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 4:20, John Martin is my little buddy, co-host Jason and John. Weekdays from 11 to 2. He covers the University of Memphis men's basketball program for The Athletic. He'll join me in about 20 minutes. I'll ask him about what the Grizzlies did yesterday. We will also talk basketball recruiting, because his favorite recruit since Austin Nichols, Matthew Hurt, announced today that he's announcing tomorrow Memphis didn't even make the Final Four. Now, I think we've known for a while that Matthew Hurt was not going to go to the University of Memphis, but can't even make the Final Four?
And what happened? What happened there?
You got to talk to Jason and John.
I've tried to rein them in. They don't listen.
They've been recruiting Matthew Hurt.
It's funny. We hear about all their recruiting victories on that midday show. We don't hear about the losses.
They've been recruiting Matthew Hurt for a year now.
I know.
Had Dick Hurt on the phone.
I remember Dick.
They bring Dick Hurt on at like 11:20 and then can't even make the Final Four?
Yeah, that hurts.
Make John answer for that. Talk to him about 20 minutes. When I finish that segment, I'll do 4 notable stories, 4:44, at which point I'm going to discuss 4 previously undiscussed stories. Among them, the American Athletic Conference and the SEC have agreed to a scheduling alliance in men's basketball, but it's probably not as great as you think. It is good, but probably not as great as you think. I'll give you the details around 4:44. UCLA completed the worst coaching search in modern history recently. Now St. John's is trying to outdo it. I think St. John's might be outdoing it.
Yep.
At least UCLA, its failure was not being able to hire coaches it was never going to be able to hire. St. John's has been turned down now by the Iona coach, the Loyola Chicago coach, the UMBC coach. Like, if you're running a Big East program and you get turned down by the UMBC coach, the Loyola Chicago coach, and the Iona coach, like, something's wrong. You screwed up. Like, you're scaring people off. We'll get into that a little later on this hour. The NBA playoffs going to continue tonight with Warriors-Clippers being the most interesting game, I think. Incredibly detailed answers from Kevin Durant about what the Clippers and Patrick Beverley are doing to him. I'll play the audio for you just before 5 o'clock. And as predicted, television ratings are down significantly for the NBA playoffs so far this postseason. The lack of LeBron is hurting big time, it seems. I'll tell you about that during 4 notable stories. 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins, just like always. Then I'll eventually do dinner to go and get out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to, but I want to start with the Memphis Grizzlies, because about 4 minutes after I went off the air last night, my friend Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN broke the news that the Grizzlies have hired Rich Cho and Glenn Grunwald and made them a part of the Memphis front office. Rich Cho is going to be vice president of basketball strategy. It appears to be an analytics job. He'll live here in Memphis. Glenn Grunwald will be a senior advisor within the basketball operations department. He will not live here in Memphis. Here's some background on both men, if you're unfamiliar, because unless you're like a NBA diehard, you probably don't know these guys. Probably didn't know their names before yesterday. So Rich Cho's 53-year-old man. He's from Burma, which is a country, of course, in Southeast Asia. He moved to the United States when he was like 14 years old. Eventually went to Washington State, earned a degree in mechanical engineering, and actually worked for Boeing from 1990 to 1995. No traditional basketball background at all. Still, he interned for the Seattle Supersonics back in 1995 while finishing a law degree from Pepperdine, and he eventually became Seattle's director of basketball affairs. Eventually moved with that franchise to Oklahoma City, spent a long time there, and then he becomes Portland's general manager back in 2010, at which point he becomes the first Asian-American general manager in NBA history. Got fired less than a year later in 2011, then became Charlotte's GM later in 2011, got fired in Charlotte in February of 2018, and has been, we found out, I guess it was yesterday, consulting for the Grizzlies over parts of the past year. So he's been the general manager of two different NBA franchises. He's an engineer and a lawyer, obviously a bright guy. As for Glenn Grunwald, he actually does have a traditional basketball background. He played for Bob Knight at Indiana, was college teammates with Isaiah Thomas. He was on that 1991 national championship team and was subsequently drafted by the Celtics, but actually never did play professional basketball. He graduated from Northwestern Law and was a corporate attorney before becoming the vice president of the Denver Nuggets in 1990. He moved to the Toronto franchise in 94, became general manager of the Raptors in 97, got fired in 2004, became general manager of the Knicks in 2011, was fired in 2013. So he, like Rich Cho, has been the general manager of two different NBA franchises, and he has also been consulting with the Grizzlies over the past year. His reputation throughout the league is very good. If not great, best I can tell. So what the Grizzlies just did here is add two former general managers to their front office, which means the Grizzlies, and this is remarkable.
How many do we have?
You now have three former general managers in your front office. Rich Cho,
yep,
former GM in Portland and in Charlotte.
All right.
Glenn Grunwald, former GM in Toronto and New York. And then, of course, Chris Wallace, former general manager in Boston and with the Grizzlies. So what this means is you have a 30-year-old Zach Kleiman now in charge. He's the de facto general manager.
He's the GM
now,
essentially.
I don't think he has the title officially, but if you were trying to describe who is Zach Kleiman right now,
yeah,
you would say he's the general manager.
Who's running the show?
He's the general manager of the Memphis Grizzlies. So what this means is that 30-year-old Zach Kleiman now has three men who have combined to be the general managers for six different NBA franchises. He has them working underneath him, which is pretty wild stuff. I texted a friend of mine who covers the NBA on a national level earlier today, and I was just like for some context here, how rare is this to have three former general managers in the same front office, none of whom are the actual general manager of the front office they're now in? And he was like, I mean, I can't give you a number, but it's got to be incredibly rare, this type of setup, to have three guys who have each run two different NBA franchises, and they're now working for the same NBA franchise, but none of them are in charge. Instead, a 30-year-old with very little basketball background is in charge. And I'm not saying it can't work or even that it won't work. I'm just saying this is not the way people usually do it. It is a very unique setup, if not a totally unprecedented setup. The same NBA source, when we're going back and forth via text, he said the whole thing is very Robert Parra and very Memphis Grizzlies. And you can interpret that to mean whatever you want.
I don't know if that's a positive.
I didn't push him on it. I just hit the little like button on my phone.
Yeah.
I was ready for that.
I had to move on.
I had other things I had to do.
Sure.
By the way, I love the little like
button. That way you don't have to acknowledge. You just acknowledge it without having to type words.
The like button is
a nice feature.
Tremendous addition to the iPhone.
Yep.
Because usually, like, if you would say, mm-hmm, hey, GP, I just texted with Woj. He's cool to go tomorrow at 4:20.
Yeah.
I'd have to type in. Thanks for handling that. Mm-hmm. And then you can't just leave it there. You'd be like, "You're welcome, GP." And I'd be like, "Okay, cowboy." And you'd be like, "Can't wait to see you tomorrow." And we're just going back. It's just stupid, yeah, right? It's totally unnecessary.
We don't need all of that.
Nobody needs all that.
No.
And you never know where to just leave the conversation, right?
Yeah.
It's like you never want to be the person who acted like you just clocked out.
You want to acknowledge, is what you're saying.
Yeah, but like the rest, usually. Unless you're really having a conversation on text message, mm-hmm. like if you're just informing another person of something on text message,
sure.
Like, I will be home soon as this game is over.
Yeah.
Or
one more beer.
Or my flight is delayed. You don't need to really talk about that. You just need to just hit that like button. Like, boom, like I got you.
You love it.
Like, I hear you. So it's like, hey, GP, I got the guest book tomorrow for 4:20. Hit that like button.
Like.
Cool. So the same thing I did with my NBA buddy today. He was like, this is all very Robert Parra and very Memphis Grizzlies.
I don't like that comment.
And I just hit the like button and I left it right there.
I don't know if that's a positive, though, Gary. It feels negative to me, especially with our recent dealings.
Listen, there is... I think maybe some of us locally are a little skewed on this.
Yeah.
And the reason is because we all know Jason Wexler. And we all know Jason Wexler to be a smart guy.
Yes.
I, if all you would have told me last week was, hey, starting tomorrow, Jason Wexler is going to be the president of the Grizzlies, I say, you know what? I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like Jason. I think he's sharp. I think he cares deeply about this city. These are all qualities that I think can make him be successful in that role.
Yes.
As we talked about last week, I don't like the way they went about making these changes. I thought they did themselves no favors. I know that they believe they were choosing between bad options and nothing but. And I acknowledge that that's true, but I still think they chose the worst option to trot Chris out there and JB out there and make them look like fools and then fire him almost immediately after
right.
that, after JB had been doing player exit interviews. I mean, we can disagree forever on this. To me, it's like over, not a big deal. My point is I disagree with that aspect of going from here to there.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have done it that way. But if you just told me Jason Wexler is in charge of the Memphis Grizzlies, sign me up. In fact, ask my opinion. Hey, GP, what do you think if we do this? I'd say I like that idea.
Me too.
I think I would do that as well. And so I think making Jason president of the Grizzlies is wildly popular in the market because mm-hmm. the people who are in a position to tell you what to think about it, like me and Vernon and Hawkins and
people
Eric
love Jason.
And Jason and John and everybody else, the people who
highly thought of.
Who have a microphone in this city, all like him mm-hmm. and all think highly of him. But outside of the market, it's a little bit of a weird mm-hmm. thing. Like, what did they just do? What is his background? And so people are not dismissive, not completely, but curious mm-hmm. because this is not normally the way something goes. And when you combine it with the Zach Kleiman thing, it becomes even more of a tricky situation for even folks in the market to make sense of. Because, again, the setup, this is where we're at right now. You have a lawyer president of the Memphis Grizzlies with no traditional basketball background. And then the de facto general manager of the Memphis Grizzlies right now is a lawyer with no traditional basketball background. And he's 30. And I want to be clear because I think we've reached the point with Zach where every time we're talking about him, his age gets mentioned. Like when we talked about Chris Wallace, how many times did you mention his age? Do you even know his age? I don't even have any idea how old Chris Wallace is. But when a 30-year-old gets hired, it becomes part of his story. It's like Zach Kleiman, who is 30 years old. I got no issue with him being 30 years old.
No.
I have long been a believer, and I've made this point many, many times in any profession. Special talents are special at any age. You know, I run into it most frequently when it comes to college coaching hires. Like, well, can you hire that guy? He's very young. If he's very good, you can hire him. Rick Pitino got hired in his 20s. John Calipari, I believe, in his 20s. You know, Billy Donovan was very young. Brad Stevens, obviously very young. I think John Calipari was going to be John Calipari whether you hired him at 29 or 39. Special talents are special. I got no issue with a 30-year-old being the general manager of the Memphis Grizzlies. But a 30-year-old with no traditional basketball background, that's a little... It's a different deal.
Yep.
It's at least reason to be... you can be optimistic, but also be not completely sold that this is, A, going to work, or B, even the right thing to do. And I think that's the most honest way to discuss it. I think Chris Harrington has put it pretty perfectly. He's optimistic. He's hopeful. He's not dismissive of it, but it is not what he would have done. And that's somebody who thinks very highly of Jason Wexler and very highly of Zach Lyman. But putting a 30-year-old in with no traditional basketball background in charge of the basketball side of things, when you have another person with no traditional basketball background serving as the president of the entire organization, again, it's not, doesn't mean it can't work, doesn't mean it won't work. It just means that it's not normal. This is not a normal approach. And perhaps that's what my buddy who I texted with earlier today meant. Like, this is not normal. This is maybe a Robert Parra thing, and it's a Grizzlies thing since Robert Parra's been the owner, but it is not a normal thing to have a 30-year-old with no basketball background overseeing the basketball side of things on a day-to-day basis with three former general managers working underneath him. But I will say this. I like what they did yesterday. I think they helped themselves yesterday. I think they made themselves better yesterday. Because now you do have, at least in Glenn Grunwald, an actual, like, traditional basketball person in your front office. Now, I don't love the fact that he's not going to live here. I understand that that's not abnormal in the NBA, that lots of organizations employ people in important roles who don't actually live on site, work on site. I prefer him be here. I think there is a benefit to everybody being in the same building every day, seeing each other, seeing the same things, as opposed to doing conference calls, maybe FaceTiming every once in a while. But, you know, I'm not in charge of where Glenn Grunwald wants to live. And if he wants to live there and they're okay with it and he wouldn't budge, then that's the deal. But at least, you know, he is a traditional basketball front office executive. He's been in charge of two different franchises. He has a basketball background. He knows everybody in the league. I like that hire. And then with Rich Cho, best I can tell is that, keep in mind, he was so good as a secondary figure in Oklahoma City's front office that that's how he got the opportunity to be a general manager in Portland first and then in Charlotte. And his track record is mixed. And when you talk about people, when you talk to people about him, the responses you'll get are mixed. But the consensus seems to be that he's totally equipped to do the job you just hired him to do. Like, maybe you don't want him running your front office, but you would like him in your front office. And there's a whole bunch of people like that. Again, just to circle back to the coaching profession, there's a whole bunch of guys that you wouldn't want to be your head coach, but you'd love them to be on your staff. And best I can tell, Rich Cho might be that guy. I don't want to put a ceiling on him. Perhaps he'll get another opportunity to be a general manager somewhere, and he'll be the best general manager in the history of general managers. But best I can gather, he's maybe not perfectly equipped to be a general manager, to actually be in charge of everything, but he's very equipped to fill a very specific role, the role that the Grizzlies just hired him to fill. Again, maybe you don't want him running your front office, but you'd love to have him in your front office. And so now the Grizzlies have him in the front office. And I think that front office has now taken form in a way that is, yes, completely unconventional, but I think you could reasonably argue impressive what you've done. And keep in mind, I said the same thing when Mike Norvell promoted a very young offensive coordinator. And by the way, look where he's at now. Just got the Auburn job, right?
Yeah.
Here's what I said.
Worked out great.
The reason I liked what Mike Norvell did when he promoted an abnormally young assistant to offensive coordinator is I said, Mike Norvell's around that guy every day. There is no way you promote somebody that age unless he's special. Unless you have identified, I don't care if this dude's 24, 44, doesn't matter to me, he's special. I'm putting him in do people his age normally have a job like this? Nope. But that's how special he is. I'm comfortable with him in his job. And now that same person has already bounced to Auburn. So now he's a super young offensive coordinator at Auburn. Same thing here with Zach Kleiman. There is no way you put him in charge of this. With his background and at his age, unless you really have seen it up close every day and you just go, this is a special talent. And so that's the reason I'm optimistic. Because if you're 30 years old, you cannot get that opportunity unless you are super duper impressive to the people who are in charge of giving you that opportunity. But even if I believed in it, it was still important to surround him with experience, to surround him with people who have done the job he's now being asked to do, surround him with people who've already done that job. Whether they've done it well or not, we could debate, but they've done the job. They know what the job requires. And they can be incredible resources for him when he just has very basic questions about, what do I do here? How do I handle this? How would you handle this? Have you ever dealt with something similar? And that is what happened yesterday. The Grizzlies took this, according to them, super talented, super bright, 30-year-old de facto general manager, and they surrounded him with two dudes who are former general managers to be resources on a day-to-day basis. And when you combine them with whatever role Chris Wallace will have in the organization, and it might be minimal, but either way, there are, technically speaking, three former general managers in the Grizzlies organization working under the de facto general manager right now. That's an interesting setup, and it's one I think I can believe in. And also, it should be noted, the Grizzlies say they're not done. They're going to add multiple more front office executives as the days and weeks and months move on. And hopefully we'll get to a place where you've got a front office that the fan base can believe in, that they do enough, and it won't be through words. They're going to have to get things right. They're going to have to undeniably do the job well in a way that is easy for the fan base to see. Make competent and accurate decisions one after another, whether that's with trades, whether that's with the draft, whether that's with contracts, in whatever ways you can show your fan base, tangible ways, we know what we're doing. Hopefully this will be the start of forming a front office that can do that, because with all due respect to everybody, and I mean that sincerely, the fan base has been out for a little while now in terms of believing in the people running the basketball side of things. Hopefully, fingers crossed, this can be the start of forming a front office that can flip that back around. Talk to John Mark.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Next.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
426, Gary Parish Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. The American Athletic Conference and the SEC announced today that they have formed a scheduling alliance, men's basketball, that will go into effect this season. I'll tell you what it means and what it does not mean in the next segment. Jeff Calkins will join me at 5 o'clock, but right now, he is my little buddy, co-host Jason and John, weekdays from 11 to 2, covers the University of Memphis men's basketball program for The Athletic. Used to be with Cookie, but he upgraded to Sam. It's John Martin making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM ESPN.
John, how you doing today? You all right?
I'm good, man. What's going on, GP?
How's your dog doing today? Am I going to hear your dog in like 2 minutes?
Let me text Sam and make sure she knows to stay outside.
Get the dog away, please.
No, I don't care at this point.
No, I mean, it's courtesy. And so we've gotten to a nice little flow here where, you know, it's about, you know, she can't really come in the house about 4:45.
She's outside with the dog now? Last time I looked, it was raining. Is it no longer?
No. She's not home yet. But her schedule, she gets home like it's always real close, Gary. You know, she'll get home at like 4:40. You know, we're still talking. You know, and when she comes in the house, these idiots lose their minds. So, you know, we've gotten to a point now where out of respect for you and out of respect for your show, you know, she got to stay in the car for a couple minutes.
You cannot make your wife sit in her own driveway. She's been out there educating the children of America all day today. Surely she's exhausted. First thing she wants to do when she gets in her car after school is drive home and just walk into her home and maybe just sit down on the couch and kick her feet up. And you're like, no, sit in the driveway so I can talk to GP about Matthew Hurt. What? Can't do that.
For like 3 minutes. Come on, she can give me 3 minutes.
Sam,
that's what she said.
Sam, if you listen,
it's really you. I'm out of a courtesy to you because my dogs, they're loud and I'm not trying to make you lose a single listener because of my damn idiot dog.
Let me help you on something. I wish somebody would have told me when I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
Don't ever try to appease your friends at the expense of your wife because it ends up not working out for you.
True.
Hey. This has nothing to do with friendship. This is business.
This is professional radio.
There you go.
This is business, and I think everybody involved understands.
So last night, about 4 minutes after I got off the air, the Memphis Grizzlies announced. Well, Adrian Wojnarowski broke first, and then the Memphis Grizzlies announced that they have added Rich Cho and Glenn Grunwald to their front office. That means they now have three former general managers, if you count Chris Wallace, working under Zach Kleiman. What do you make of how the front office is taking form so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all kind of expected Rich Cho would be a part of, you know, the new iteration of the front office just because the familiarity that Kleiman had from working under him, you know, several years ago. So I wasn't shocked by that. You know, and when you look at some of the things he did, and it's sometimes problematic because, you know, you don't know what the dynamics of a front office are, right? Like, he was in Charlotte, but, you know, how much of a say did he really have? Was he, you know, how much of the decisions that were made on his watch influenced by, you know, for example, Michael Jordan? You know, like, there were – so you don't know sort of how much influence he truly had or what moves his fingerprints were over. But it's a mixed bag, right? Like, if you just sort of tallied it up, he drafted Kemba Walker in 2011, which is a really nice pick. Like, that was the 9th overall pick. The Grizzlies are going to be drafting, if they keep the pick, probably 8th. And, you know, if you could get a Kemba Walker at 8, that would be amazing. So it's a good pick there. He signed Al Jefferson, you know, and Al Jefferson gave him some good years. I don't think they ever really won anything, but it was fine. Traded for Dwight, or, you know, got Dwight Howard. You know, also on the flip side of that, gave out some pretty bad contracts. Now, it was the summer of 2016, and everybody was doing that, Grizzlies included, but they're bad. Nick Batum, $120 million. Marvin Williams, $54 million. So you can find good and bad, and I imagine that's probably the case with 95 to 99% of every other executive. And then the same with Glenn Grunwald. So, you know, it's just one of those things. It's going to take time to see, obviously, how this particular group of men, you know, mesh together. But with everything else in life, I think there's some good and there's some bad. It just depends on how you want to look at it.
I do think there are good general managers and bad general managers. But I think most general managers, like if you say there's 30 of them, and these are just rough spitball numbers, but I bet you there are 5 that are above the rest and 5 that are worse than everybody else, and about 20 that are totally, like, they're the total mixed bag. I think if you do that job, you're gonna have good contracts and bad contracts, good picks, bad picks.
Yeah.
You know, and that summer where he gave out all those big contracts, basically every contract awarded that summer is a bad contract, other than maybe Mike Conley's.
You're exactly right. No, we actually talked about this on the show. Like, who are the executives that sort of around the league, like you would say, are amazing? Sam Presti, I think you would give that title to. Danny Ainge, R.C. Buford. You know, anybody else that I'm missing?
Daryl Morey.
Bob
Myers. But, like, is Bob Myers amazing, or did Bob Myers just, like, you know?
Well, they drafted really though.
Yeah.
They drafted well. So
I think you just named 5. I think Ainge is actually terrific. I think he is – if you could,
he got a first round pick for Jeff Green.
If you could quadruple his salary and get him to move, I think that would be worth it for your franchise. Like, really, if you had to pay him $20 million a year to run your franchise, I think it would be a good investment in your franchise. It doesn't mean you could get him I'm not suggesting the Grizzlies should go offer Danny Ainge $20 million, but I think he is that special at that job. But I think probably 20 of the 30 GMs are just guys that they could do the job, or the guy sitting right next to him could do the job more or less the exact same way.
Yeah, and so that's what you kind of have to keep in mind when you're, you know, and we'll see. I mean, I think, you know, most people, like we, I think we kind of talked about this last week, you know, most people say that, you know, around the trade deadline that it was Zach Kleiman who was, you know, really fielding most of the calls. And so you look at the trade deadline, at the time it didn't look like a good deal. You were like, wow, that's all they got for Marc Gasol. But now look, like Jonas Valanciunas like was awesome. He found a new energy here in Memphis. DeLon Wright is, you know, arguably the best backup point guard the Grizzlies have ever had. And so that deal looks to be really good for the Grizzlies. And if that's the one that we have so far, you know, on Zach Kleiman, that's great. And then, of course, last Thursday was a debacle by the front office. So you take the good with the bad. But, you know, so, you know, they're starting from zero. And now we're truly going to see if this will work.
Talking to John Martin here on 92.9 FM ESPN. He's on Twitter at JohnMartin929. Let's talk Tiger basketball recruiting. How sad are you going to be tomorrow when you hear Matthew Hurt announce that he's not going to be a University of Memphis Tiger, finally makes it official? All that time you spent talking to Dick Hurt, and now Memphis, and now Memphis doesn't even make the Final Four. How could you and Jason not get Dick Hurt to put Memphis in Matthew's Final Four? You failed on this one.
You know what? I was really disappointed in Dick Hurt on that. You're right. I mean, I haven't talked to. He came on like
you
what
are
last
five.
April. He came on the show last April. And I mean, Memphis was very, it was still, you know, remember how exciting it was? You know, Memphis was just going to get it.
They were never going to get him. And I told you that from the very first day.
Oh yeah. But I mean, I have not mentioned Memphis as a legitimate possibility for Matt Hurt since last April. I mean, he has not even come up in conversation.
But with your strong relationship with Dick Hurt, you couldn't get into the Final Four. I thought for sure you could get him in the Final Four just because you're tight with Dick Hurt.
I told Dick, I was like, I know y'all want to take a visit down here. You know, you're talking about doing it, but there's no point in doing it. So just go ahead, and because you're not picking Memphis, just take them off the list. I saved everybody time.
Is Penny and Mike upset with you and Jason? You guys are like an extension of the staff, and you just didn't get this one done. I give you credit on some of the other ones. You're doing good work in the community. I think the Tyler Harris thing, you helped get that done. But you got more wins than losses, but seemed like you could have got farther with Dick Hurt.
I mean, you know, he's a tough nut to crack.
No.
You don't have to tell me.
So he's a tough nut to crack.
He's going to Duke. There's no doubt about that, right?
Correct. That's a done deal. When was it? Everybody got phone calls on that. My understanding is Monday night. Everybody who was still relevant to that recruitment was informed officially on Monday night.
No, it reminded me of the Malik Newman situation. I got like criticized for this. I don't even know why. Because like most recruiting writers, they don't break news on commitments. They let the high school players do that, announce it on their own terms. But I'm not a recruiting writer, so what did I care? But Malik Newman, like I got a call from somebody, and they were like, he's 100% going to Mississippi State.
Yeah.
You can tweet it now. He's announcing tomorrow, but it's going to be Mississippi State. And I was like, well, how do you know for sure? And I don't want to say what staff it was, but there were like four staff still involved. And it was like, or maybe three. Maybe it was Mississippi State, Kentucky, and Kansas. And I just got a call from one of those staffs, and they were like, we were supposed to go see him tonight. They told us not to come. And so then I called the other staff, and they were like, yeah, they told us not to come. And so they were canceling everything with everybody because they had just settled on Mississippi State. And this seems to be the same one. My understanding is Matthew Hurt, like, canceled in-home visits with Kentucky and Kansas, and the suggestion is that he's clearly going to pick Duke, and that'll propel Duke to the number one recruiting class in the country, I believe, according to Evan Daniels.
For now.
Ooh. Ooh.
Darn.
Sounds like somebody's erect over Precious Achiuwa.
How come I'm erect every Thursday at this time?
I don't. You tell me. That's not
Dick
for
Hurt.
Me. It's not for me to say.
It's you always telling me that I'm erect, though. It's not like I'm not telling you.
How much do you love Precious Achiuwa? Have you moved on from Matthew Hurt to Precious Achiuwa?
Dude, I mean, have you watched Precious Achiuwa play?
I've watched highlights.
He's awesome. I mean, he's awesome. I mean, he's a one and done type of kid. Can score it, great motor, like just plays through the 3 through 4. You know, he is awesome. And, you know, like I've said it for a month now. I mean, a lot of people probably moved on, or not moved on, but sort of forgot about Precious Achiuwa. You know, he came in for madness and then you didn't hear a whole lot. His recruitment's kind of been low profile, like strikingly low profile for a kid who's ranked in the top 10, honestly. But Memphis is getting him in next week. And they have sort of packaged this whole thing. They've said, listen, you got your buddy Lester, who you played on an AAU team with there in New York. We're in great with him. Come here with him and join up with James Wiseman, and let's make a run at a top 10 ranking in Gary Parish's top 25 and one.
Okay.
And right. And try to win the AAC.
Okay, so last thing before I let you go.
Nice.
I love it when you put percentages on things. So give me a percentage.
Oh, no, don't do this.
A percentage on Precious Achiuwa and Lester Quinones ending up at Memphis as a makeshift package deal. You put the
both of them, you're saying?
Yeah, I want them both.
I'm going to say, I'm trying to come up with, like, the perfect number that's, like, favorable but not done. So how about 65%?
65%. I'm going to write that down right now. John Martin says there's a 65% chance Memphis lands both of those players. And then does that propel the Tigers to the number one class in America?
Well, I mean, this is before Matthew Hurt went to Duke, but the last time I played with those numbers, Lester and Precious did take Memphis to number one. And per the class calculator, which would be a first. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. Like the sheer amount of, you know, top players that they are involved with this year. I mean, I think when Penny got the job, it was like, okay, you know, James Wiseman, DJ Jeffries, you know, everybody kind of Malcolm Dandridge. But the fact that they're legitimately involved with a top 50 kid in Lester Quinones, you know, top 20 in Turner Watford, who we knew on another level as well, but also Precious Achiuwa. I mean, and the fact that they could get – and also, you know, your man Ray John Tucker. You know, we had him on the show earlier this week, you know. That's another guy they could feasibly get as well. So it's pretty ridiculous how many guys they're involved with at this time.
I've been surprised by it. I assumed that he'd get most, if not all, of the Memphis kids that he wanted. I didn't know that he'd be able to go outside of the market and beat Blue Bloods for top 25 prospects. And he hasn't done it yet. But
right.
But it does, like, they very clearly got a shot to do it, and if they do, it'll be a game changer, because I do think adding those two guys take you from being a borderline top 25 team to a probable top 10 team, and that's when you can start talking realistically about the things fans like to talk about, like Final Fours and maybe even national championships. But we'll continue that another day. Sam, if you're in the driveway, you can come inside now. All right, sweetheart. Come on inside.
Exactly. What he said, that's perfect.
I'll see you later. Bye-bye. When we come back, the SEC and the American Athletic Conference announced earlier today that they have a scheduling alliance for men's basketball. I'll tell you what it means and what it does not mean right after this break. Jeff Calkins is your award-winning columnist over at the Daily Memphian, and he hosts the Jeff Calkins Show. He's going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. We'll get back into the Grizzlies conversation then. I'll ask him what he thinks about what the Grizz did yesterday in hiring Rich Cho and Glenn Grunwald to the front office. Jeff Calkins will be here a little after 5 o'clock, but right now I got 4 stories I'd like to discuss.
4 stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. 4 notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's 4 notable stories at 4:44. Story number 1.
So the American Athletic Conference, that's the University of Memphis Conference, and the SEC, that's Tennessee and Ole Miss and Mississippi State's conference, announced today that they have formed a scheduling alliance that will feature 4 games each season, starting this season, between SEC and AAC schools. And so I had heard this was happening, so I knew what it was, but it was interesting to watch the immediate reaction, because people were like, woohoo, we've got the SEC AAC challenge, just like the ACC Big Ten challenge.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's not really that. And so the tip-off here, or the giveaway, I should say, is it's four games a year. So you go, why four? That's a weird number. Most conference challenges are much bigger numbers. Why four? And I'll tell you why. It's because the SEC already has the SEC Big 12 Challenge. And even though the Big 12 is called the Big 12, the Big 12 only has 10 schools. So each year, you can only have 10 games in the SEC Big 12 Challenge because the Big 12 can only provide 10 basketball teams. Well, how many teams are in the SEC?
14.
14. So you got four left over every year that are looking for a game.
Oh.
Let's do this with the American Athletic Conference. There's a connection here as well. Dan Leibovitz works in the SEC now. He's like a basketball liaison, but he came to the SEC from the American Athletic Conference.
Okay.
So he's got relationships on each side, and he was able to, my understanding is, largely get this thing put together. But if you heard this and were thinking, oh, wow, we could get Memphis against Kentucky and
right.
Wichita State against Florida and Connecticut against Tennessee, that's just not the way this is going to go. The American Athletic Conference is going to get games, four games, against the four teams that are left out of the SEC Big 12 Challenge. That's the way it's going to work. And the way the SEC picked its teams last time was they just left out the four teams that finished 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th in the previous season. And so if the SEC takes that same approach this season, and I don't know that they will, but if they do, that means that the AAC-SEC Challenge would feature four American Athletic Conference teams against Vanderbilt, Georgia, Missouri, A&M. You're not going to get LSU, Kentucky, Tennessee, Auburn, Ole Miss, Florida, programs of that stature, or at least programs that have been that good recently. And so on one hand, that's a little disappointing. On the other hand, it's still games against Jerry Stackhouse and Vanderbilt, Tom Crean in Georgia, Konzo Martin in Missouri, Buzz Williams in Texas A&M. So it's not the best thing you could get, but it's still better than probably anything else you can get given the challenges in non-league scheduling. And so I would imagine what you will see year in and year out, more often than not, is very good AAC teams against the SEC teams that have been struggling of late. And that'll be your AAC-SEC challenge. So it's not like the other challenges, but it still is going to provide, if nothing else, four games each year between SEC programs and AAC programs.
Story number two.
So UCLA just wrapped up recently the worst coaching search in modern history when it landed on Mick Cronin. But boy, oh boy, St. John's is trying to take that title from UCLA right now because they are still looking for a coach, even though Chris Mullin, it was reported, even before the national championship game, that he was resigning his position as head coach at St. John's. They have now been turned down by, Bobby Hurley, but I think some people expected that. They've been turned down by Tim Clouse at Iona, Porter Moser at Loyola Chicago, and Ryan Odom at UMBC. Forget all the other people that's turned them down. Like, St. John's has just been turned down, a Big East program, by the Iona coach, the UMBC coach, and the Loyola Chicago coach. And I can just tell you, can't really tell you how I can tell you, but I can just tell you, I was shocked when Porter Moser turned that job down because I think he was a little frustrated. Like, I don't want to pretend he doesn't love Loyola Chicago and all that stuff. I think that's sincere. But I believe he was very aware that he's the first mid-major coach in a long time to go to a Final Four and not get a better job. Like, Brad Stevens took Butler to a Final Four, to two of them. He ends up coach of the Celtics. Jim Larrañaga takes George Mason to a Final Four. He ends up coach at Miami. Shaka Smart takes VCU to a Final Four. He ends up the coach at Texas. Like, the history had been pretty clear. Like, if you are able to bounce there, whether it's because you're awesome or because you got lucky, you're going to get big opportunities. And here was Porter Moser. Like, he didn't get nothing last year. Takes a little Chicago to Final Four, gets nothing. And I think, I don't know that it frustrated him, but he was aware. He was aware, like, hey, why am I the only one that didn't get these offers? Then St. John's puts, like, a lot of money on the table. I think the total package was worth, like, $17 million.
Jeez.
And I was, and when that was reported a couple nights ago, I was like, well, he's taking that.
Yeah, here he goes.
And he turns it down. And a buddy asked me, like, why would he turn that down? And I said, something spooked him. He would never, if you would have told him 2 weeks ago, St. John's going to offer you the job, will you do it? Just blindly, like on a surface level? Of course.
Something's going on.
Something spooked him.
What is it?
I think that it is an administration mess. There are people pulling in different directions.
Yeah.
Nobody knows who's in charge. And when you, I don't know if you've ever interviewed for a job, but you go into it thinking, I think I'd take this.
Yes.
And then you walk out of the meeting and you go,
I can't do this.
The person I just talked to
is
going to be in charge of me. I have no confidence in that person.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Right. It happens.
I can tell you many years ago, Sean Miller interviewed at Maryland.
Yeah.
And was going in, going to take the job. This is when he was at Xavier. And he sat down with the AD at Maryland and he was like, I can't. This is not right for me.
Wow.
This is not right for me. And then he turned it down and then he ended up at Arizona. Nice. But it feels like that's what's happened here, is that the UMBC coach should never turn down the St. John's job.
Yeah.
The Iona coach should never turn down the St. John's job. And the Loyola Chicago coach should never turn down the St. John's job. And that's why the people at St. John's have to look in the mirror and go, what are we doing to make people who should take our job not want our job? Because this is not normal. At least at UCLA, they were getting turned down by people who shouldn't want their job, like the Kentucky coach, like the Virginia coach.
Yep.
Here, the St. John's is getting turned down by people who should be dying to get their job, people who should be on the phone with their agent saying, see if you can get me involved at St. John's. And then you actually got $17 million offer on the table, and you're like, I don't want it. What? I mean, it is bizarre. And so now the latest reports is Paul Hewitt, the former Georgia Tech coach, who's now a scout with the Clippers, is involved. That I guess that's about as good as you can do right now.
Really?
I guess that's about as good as you can do right now. He is from Jamaica, Queens, so he's from the area.
All right.
And he did go to a national championship game. I mean, he's got a resume. He also got fired at Georgia Tech and fired at George Mason, so whatever. But, like, I can't imagine St. John's ever thought it was going to hire its next coach, somebody who just a few years ago got fired at George Mason. But maybe you can't do any better. But if they can't do better, it's on the people trying to do it. It ain't the job. Because the job they're presenting is better than the jobs these guys have. At least three of them, and they're turning it down one after another.
Rick Pitino wouldn't turn it down, would he?
No. I mean, honestly, I would hire him in a second.
Yeah.
They're not going to do it.
No.
I would have hired him already. He would have been my first choice.
Yeah.
Like, and so he'd definitely be my eighth choice. I'd take him right now. I mean, he'd be great there.
Yeah.
And who cares? I mean, like, dude, Sean Miller's coaching at Arizona. Who cares? Like Will Wade is the coach at LSU again. Who cares? Like, everybody likes to pretend like, I would. Yeah,
integrity, you know, and all this stuff. Right.
Get out of my face. Right. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. And the people who do care, they ain't the people you're going to have to win over anyway.
Right.
The people who do care, they're going to care for a day, and then they're going to get back to their lives because everybody moves on after a day. And then guess what? You got a Hall of Fame coach running your basketball program as opposed to whoever you're going to get to run your program. If you put me in charge of St. John's, I'd have hired Rick Pitino a week ago. But it doesn't look like that's what they're going to do. Instead, they're going to keep fishing in dumb waters.
Story number three.
Big game tonight. Three NBA playoff games. But the biggest, I think, is Warriors-Clippers. Yep. Even though the Warriors are 8.5-point favorites on the road, this series is tied 1-1, and there is a developing storyline in this series between Kevin Durant and Patrick Beverley. More specifically, what the Clippers, led by Patrick Beverley, are doing to Kevin Durant. And so Kevin, who has a tendency to be short, and dismissive of the media, like, really sat down and talked about this yesterday after shoot-around. I thought it was interesting if you've missed it. Here's Kevin Durant when asked about Patrick Beverley and the Clippers and how they're guarding him.
Or by watching, and if so, what was your takeaway from the last game, you and the team?
Yep, I do break it down. Well, we had a nice flow of the game. You know, let's go back to the whole last month of the season. We've been playing this way for a while. And when we got to this series, game one, we had some nice momentum. They're playing a gimmick defense, which has been working, top blocking everything on the perimeter. So guys not even looking at the three-point line. They're just forcing guys inside the three-point line. So for us, when I get the ball in my spots, you know, I got a pest, Patrick Beverley, who was up underneath me. Well, I could definitely shoot over top and score every time if it's a one-on-one situation. But we got a guy that's dropping and helping, and then we got another guy that's just sitting on me waiting for me to dribble the basketball. If I put the basketball on the floor, I can probably make 43% of my shots if I shoot them like that. But that's not really going to do nothing for us at with the outcome of the game, you know, because we got a nice flow. Everybody touching the rock, everybody shooting and scoring. So I'm not going to get in the way of the game because, you know, I want to have a little back and forth with Patrick Beverly. I'm Kevin Durant. You know who I am. Y'all know who I am.
Are they tilting the floor? You mentioned kind of the defense they're playing. Are they overplaying it more than, or is there a time in your career you can remember a defense maybe in a playoff series playing you this way?
Yeah, for sure. I've been playing against every defense. It's not just that tight, you know, but the constant help on my drives, the poking at the ball as I'm dribbling, the, you know, two guys rushing me as I'm beating somebody off the dribble. You know, that's how I learned how to pass the ball and kind of be patient, a little bit more patient before the catch, you know, so. I gotta set up shop sometimes, you know, and clear out space so I can get my stuff going. But in this series, it's kind of weird because, you know, when the guy is that small, you know, you got the advantage. But, you know, the refs see, you know, we hear David and Goliath a lot growing up, you know, so that story is pretty much prominent in people's minds. So when you put that out there on the court against me, then the refs gonna give him a little bit more. So when he run up on me like a pit bull, grab me, hold me, I don't mind it. That's how he make his money. That's how he feed his family. But if I throw something back, then let us play. You get what I'm saying? So I got 4 or 5 offensive fouls like that. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, each possession, how I can be more effective without getting offensive fouls.
You just don't usually get those types of in-depth answers. Usually when you ask a basketball player something, they're just like, you know, they're throwing a lot of stuff at me, but we'll figure it out. And then it's like next question.
That was really long.
But he decided to spend like, here, let me tell you exactly what they're doing. And he wasn't dismissive of Patrick Beverly the way stars are often dismissive of role players like Patrick Beverly. Like I saw a clip floating around today on Twitter of Kobe Bryant like just being completely dismissive back in the day of Rajah Bell. Like, who is that? I don't even know who he is. And Kevin Durant's like, Patrick Beverly is a pit bull.
Yep.
And
that's how he feeds his family.
When he runs up on me and grabs and holds me, the refs are letting him do it. And he says, I'm not mad at him. That's how he makes his money. That's how he feeds his family.
Right.
I'm not mad at him. But if the refs are going to let him do that and then not let me give it back to him a little bit, well, you know, now I've got problems. And he did pick up 4 offensive fouls in that last game. And so the counter argument to what Kevin's saying there and what Kevin is saying there is I'm catching the ball. And I could put it on the floor and pull up and shoot over him. No problem.
Yeah.
But is that the best thing for our team? And he, obviously, the implication is he believes it's not.
Right.
I'm not sure it's not. Because at some point, if Steph Lee, the most talented scorer in the world, go score. Don't go take 8 shots.
Yeah.
Like last game, he took as many the same amount of shots as Patrick Beverly. That should never happen.
Shoot 15 basketball to 20. Game.
So Steve Kerr actually would... They're not disagreeing head-to-head, but what Steve Kerr is saying doesn't line up with what Kevin's saying there at all.
Right.
Kevin's like, with the way they're playing me, it is not in our best interest for me to shoot over Patrick Beverly. And Steve Kerr's saying, I want him to shoot 30 times.
Yes.
And if you saw Charles Barkley on TV last night, what he said was, Kevin has got to – you got to post him up.
Right.
Like, if they're going to put a little guy on you, you have got to go straight to the block and just tell him, throw it up.
Give
me
the ball.
But that's not the way Kevin likes to play.
Right.
You know, Kevin is a perimeter-oriented player. And so, to me, this is the most interesting slash fascinating thing that's going to happen tonight. I don't care much about, like, the game, who wins, who loses. Yeah. But this interesting thing that we've now got developed between Patrick Beverly and Kevin Durant, and Kevin thinking he needs to handle this situation one way, his coach thinking he needs to handle it another way, Charles Barkley on TV saying he needs to handle it another way, makes for interesting basketball stuff inside of the game. And so usually, unless it would be the Grizzlies tipping off at 9:30, it'd be like, you know, I'm going to see maybe the first quarter of that, and then I'll be passed out. But I'll try to stay up for this one tonight. 9:30 tip, Warriors-Clippers. It's on TNT.
Story number 4.
Shouldn't be a surprise, but numbers are in so far for NBA playoffs. You know, we're only Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 5 days into it, but they're down 26% from where they were last year. And this isn't just a sports thing. Like sometimes people think, well, maybe everything in sports is down. NCAA tournament year over year, up 9%.
Wow.
College basketball regular season was up 5%. NASCAR, up 3%.
Yeah.
NHL regular season, up 2%.
NHL playoffs down big, 16%, but NBA playoffs down bigger than anything else, 26%. And I really do think it's a couple of obvious things that we've talked about recently. It's got nothing to do with the Grizzlies. One of my reasons for having a lack of interest was there's no Grizzlies involved for the second straight year. That doesn't matter to the country, just trust me. But not having LeBron is a big deal.
Sure.
Every game LeBron played was an event. The Kings on the court.
Yeah.
Now you don't get any of those.
Now, we talked about it on this show a ton.
You had LeBron for the past 8 years playing in the last game of the season.
Yep.
And now, and that means all the way through to the last game of the season. Now you don't have him at all. So that's like a boom. You just lose people. You just lose people. You and then the perception, at least, that this is just the Warriors are going to waltz through it, I think plays into what am I even watching this for. I think it could change Warriors-Rockets second round, particularly if Houston goes and like wins game one and you go, okay, they can really play with them. But right now, it's just it's not that compelling. I am suddenly interested in the Durant-Beverly thing, but big picture, it's heading into it this past Saturday, I thought that it wasn't that compelling, and the early returns on TV ratings are backing that up. Again, NBA playoffs down 26% year over year. Jeff Calkins up next.